Under the radar means hearing about things you didn't know you needed to know until you hear them.
It's a serious look.
You hear about the issues that don't get the attention they deserve.
Under the radar doesn't get caught up in the day-to-day.
Surfacing issues that are not talked about in mainstream media.
I think it's something that connects us to each other.
Under the radar is all about discovery.
I can be guaranteed voices I haven't heard before.
But also the questions.
Under the radar is one step ahead.
I'm Callie Crossley. This week on Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. 21 anti-transgender laws have passed nationwide this year, with hundreds more under consideration. But Maine's legislature has gone against the trend, instead approving a new SHIELD law protecting healthcare workers who provide gender-affirming care. Plus, Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley and Senator Elizabeth Warren successfully fought for $850,000 in federal funds for an LGBTQ senior housing development known as The Pride. And the South End once held the crown, but now many claim Dorchester to be Boston's star gayborhood. Later in the show, South Korean art, cinema, literature, and music are now exported throughout the world. How did the country become one of today's global trendsetters?
Fashion designers really take a pride in their cultural identity and have this confidence of taking something that was considered old and traditional and making to a contemporary vocabulary and a contemporary sense of aesthetics.
The Boston Museum of Fine Arts celebrates Hallyu, or the Korean Cultural Wave. But first, joining me remotely, Grace Sterling Stoll, Executive Director of the Boston Alliance of Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, Queer Youth, or BAGLY. Hi, Grace.
Glad to be here this morning.
Jansen Wu, Senior Director of State Advocacy and Government Relations at the Trevor Project. Welcome back, Jansen.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And Polly Crozier, Director of Family Advocacy for GLBTQ Legal Advocates and Defenders, or GLAAD. Hello, Polly.
Hello, Callie. Great to be here.
I'm glad to have all of you. I want to start with Maine's new law, primarily because we're in an environment where pretty much the conversations that we've had in this particular roundtable have been about the onslaught of the anti-LGBTQ laws. So I thought the environment is still there, hadn't gone away. Let's start with some places where something else is happening at the same time. And one of the places is in Maine. As we've said, they just put in place this Maine SHIELD law, which protects providers of health care for people who want to get abortions, as well as gender-affirming care. Now, the bill allows for some gender-affirming care without parental consent. It does not allow for surgery without parental consent. Before we jump in with the conversation, let's take a listen to New Center Maine's conversation with a Planned Parenthood representative advocating for Maine SHIELD law, followed by a critic who opposes allowing minors to get gender-affirming care in the state.
This bill is critically important because it's about protecting medical care that's already legal in Maine from interference from out-of-state extremists who are attempting to reach into Maine and dictate our medical care and how we practice it.
Who could ever believe that anyone could consider legalizing the bringing of a child from another state to Maine against the parents' wishes, or even knowledge, effectively kidnapping a minor?
So I want to start with you, Polly, because you worked on this bill.
I did. It was really a pleasure to work on this bill. GLAAD worked really closely with Planned Parenthood of Northern New England and a number of other stakeholders in the legislature, of course, as well as the Attorney General and others to draft and pass the SHIELD bill, which you're absolutely right, protects providers and access to reproductive health care and transgender health care. And one of the things I think that was so important about the bill was, I think, how incredibly important it is to protect states and where care is legal, because providers are worried, right? There's really a lot of disinformation and misinformation out there, and we want to make sure that in states where care is legal, that providers are able to provide best practice medical care. The interesting thing about Maine, which you just heard in those clips, is really the tremendous amount of misinformation that was swirling, right? Opponents took what was really a straightforward and positive bill and really spread so much misinformation. So that was really part of the work, was making sure that the truth and the real language of the bill came out and was heard above the fray of really powerful social media disinformation.
So this becomes one of at least 12 states that have shield laws that apply to gender-affirming care, Janssen. That's a, you know, considering what else is going on, it seems like a small number, but it has a large impact, I think, overall, because I'm not sure I knew there were many. I didn't even know there were any, to be frank.
These laws are a really important piece of, you know, protecting providers first, as Polly put it, but also, you know, protecting the lives of LGBTQ plus young people. So let's just start generally. We know that LGBTQ plus young people are at greater risk of suicide than their non-LGBTQ plus counterparts. 41% of LGBTQ plus young people seriously consider suicide, in the past year. What we also know is that receiving this necessary and often life-saving healthcare for transgender youth can decrease your odds of recent depression or past year suicide attempt by nearly 40%. So, you know, this is all from research that Trevor has conducted over the years, and it really shows how important and necessary this healthcare is. And in order for young people to have access to that necessary healthcare, we must first start by protecting the providers.
Well, let me correct myself. I said there were at least 12 states. There might be 12 states because Maryland just passed a shield law, but it's not been signed. So it would be the 12th state if that, in fact, got a signature. The other thing, Grace, is I just think people would find it interesting to see how the vote broke down. So the Senate voted 21-13 in favor of the main bill, and the House voted 76-67. So that wasn't close. I mean, I think that says something about the fact that there were obviously a lot of folks that stood behind the bill.
You know, I think it's so important that our allies are stepping up, because these kind of efforts from the radical right to infringe on legal, medically necessary care and to reach into states that already have protections, it's important for our allies to step up, as they did in this case, to affirm that this is legal, medically necessary care, that young people and women and folks who access services need to be protected and basically combat the misinformation that's being used to scare people into making decisions that actually aren't the right ones.
So most recently, we have the Kansas governor vetoing gender-affirming trans care. We have Tennessee criminalizing anybody that helps minors get transgender care. But even more recently, the Supreme Court has ruled that in a decision that would allow Idaho to continue to ban gender-affirming care. Now, what's the weight of that, Polly?
Well, one of the things about that recent Supreme Court action, I think, is just to remember that it was really, it was honestly a procedural action, right? And I think that case is going to be ongoing, and the effort to stop these really heinous bans is going to be moving on. What we're seeing, of course, is 24 states, right? Just recently, Wyoming also passed a healthcare ban. And of course, states are not only banning access to healthcare, but they're banning access to sports, to so many things that transgender young people need to thrive and survive. And that there are really many people who are facing a dire lack of access to healthcare in the states where they live. So I think this is just one step, more step in the journey. I think it was a procedural piece, and we are working, I think, across the movement in so many organizations to stop these bans through the courts, because they are simply unconstitutional and harmful and really reduce parents' ability to get healthcare for their children that is medically necessary and best practice.
Grace, what say you about the Supreme Court ruling?
I think what I'm hearing on the ground from young people is fear, and it's fear of how far this could go, and even if it's happening in other states, could it happen in our states, or could there be something that overrules the state's protection? So I think it's important that we are aware of what's happening at all levels, and that we're working with allies and other communities and other movements to make sure that we're fighting together against all of this.
Jansen, how would you put a button on this?
I think it's important for, you know, all families, you know, with transgender children who are scared, you know, reasonably so, about their healthcare being ripped away. What's important for them to know is that while the Supreme Court will, you know, likely have the last word on this with regards to the constitutionality of these bans, they haven't done that yet. This action they just took in Idaho was not the last word. It was procedural, as Polly said. There are still a number of courts that have preliminary injunctions that are keeping other bans in other states from going into effect, and that these cases are working, you know, slowly but surely through the court system. And so for all families who are out there wondering about whether or not they can still receive the healthcare their child needs, we really encourage those folks to seek out legal support, reach out to their state LGBTQ organizations to find out the state of the law in their own states.
Okay, we're going to change the topic now, bring it back home locally. For a couple of years now, I think maybe on this show we first discussed the Pryde, that's PRYDE, which is a senior housing development. And this grew out of many studies and experiences from folks trying, as seniors, LGBTQ plus seniors, trying to find housing and discovering that there was bias in other should be like facilities, and, you know, just damaged both psychologically, sometimes physically. So people were looking around, is there a way to have a space where people can feel safe? And this was a very important project. They broke ground on it. Here is Representative Ayanna Pressley in November of 2023 when she affirmed her support for the Pryde.
This project satisfies the committee's requirements and would meet a critical need in my district at a time when mortgages are skyrocketing and one-third of LGBTQ seniors are living in poverty, and many are forced to recloset themselves in order to age in community in their twilight years.
Now, I played that because Congresswoman Pressley had to become very active after funding for the Pryde, quite a bit of funding, was eliminated in one of the budget cuts. And she fought, along with Senator Elizabeth Warren, and I left out Senator Ed Markey, to get that money back through the a community fund, $850,000 in federal community project funding, which is very, very important to make sure that this, that the Pryde becomes reality. This is going to repurpose an old school for 74 apartments. And there's quite a bit of excitement about, you know, the possibilities of it. But I wanted to ask you, I'll start with you, Grace, just the win. They're both, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley is very excited about being able to bring that money back home.
Yeah, this is great. This is exciting news. I know many of the people who are involved in the project. And as somebody who is a queer and trans elder myself, and this is an important issue for my generation, folks who in many cases were you know, out at a young age, were, you know, the tail end of the Stonewall generation and older, and to have safe and supportive housing in our later years is just really, really important, because the for many of us, this became the test. You know, we were young activists, and then middle-aged activists, and now older activists, and to go back in the closet, whether that's even possible for many of us, would be you know, terrible. And so I think it's so important that they were able to secure this funding and to open up this facility and provide support for the LGBTQ elders.
The reason that going back in the closet, it's mentioned by Grace and by Ayanna Pressley in her statement in 2023, Jansen, is because that's what people were doing to ensure that they would have a space in senior housing.
That's right. And that's underscores the importance of this project. And thank you to Representative Presley's leadership on this. $850,000 is a big deal for this project, but when you think about it in the context of an appropriation bill, it's a fraction of a fraction of a percent. And so, you know, the other story here is that it shows, you know, the extent that, you know, extreme conservatives in Congress have used the budgeting process as a way to attack the LGBTQ community. And that's a disturbing trend to have. And then just the last thing I just want to say on this is, you know, I've, you know, used to do a little more work on LGBTQ elder housing issues. And one of the things I remember hearing many of the advocates, you know, say is that we're not going to be able to build our way to a solution. And as important as this project is, we are also going to have to ensure that existing senior housing is inclusive and affirming of all elders, including LGBTQ plus elders.
Yes, Polly, weigh in on that, because this funding, as Jansen has referred to, came from the community project funding process. So I'm assuming there wasn't, that's not a huge fund to begin with. So he makes a valid point.
Well, I don't know too much about that funding or that project, but all I know is I think the Pride is an incredibly vital resource for the community. I'm so grateful that it was fully funded. I mean, in my work at GLAAD, I have been involved in a case in Boston involving discrimination against an LGBTQ elder, right, who was essentially closeted in her older years. And all I can say is I think this is so vital for the community. And there is a lot of discrimination happening in guardianship proceedings, in assisted living settings, and to have this kind of space for LGBTQ elders to be able to be in community, to be safe, to have this kind of investment, I think it is so incredibly important and really strengthens the fabric of Boston. So really grateful for it.
If you're just tuning in, this is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. I'm Callie Crossley, and I'm speaking with Grace Sterling Stowell of Bagley, Jansen Wu of the Trevor Project, and Polly Crozier of GLAAD. We're talking about the latest LGBTQ news you need to know. A way to push back always, of course, is to use the courts. And I just took note of this case in Florida. As you know, that's the place where Ron DeSantis, the governor, has made it his business to put forth a lot of anti-LGBTQ laws that have many tentacles in various directions. But one of them left a transgender algebra teacher kind of at odds because her students called her Ms. Wood, but under the law, the way it was structured, she couldn't do that anymore. They were going to have to call her Teacher Wood. Well, she went to court and she won. Just want to get responses to each of you. Jansen, what do you think?
It's a really important decision. And again, it's a preliminary one, but we're hopeful that it holds. You know, LGBTQ and especially transgender teachers should be able to come to school, come to work as who they are. And not only is that better for the teachers, but it's better for their students to understand, who their teacher really is and not to have these types of impositions by government in the classroom. And so, you know, happy to see the court have made this preliminary ruling. But we also know that there are many more attempts out there right now to censor teachers and students in schools.
I just want to point out, Grace, that the students did not, you know, prompt this action. This is because of these series of laws that have been put in place in Florida. So these are students that were students protesting, saying Katie Wood, the teacher, should be able to be addressed as Ms. Wood.
Absolutely. What we're seeing across the board is that, you know, this isn't about the young people. The young people have no problem with so many of these things. And it's really a tactic of the right to dehumanize trans people and LGBTQ people and others. And so, I'm glad to see that the students were protesting in support and recognizing that it's despite the rhetoric from the right that this is all to protect children or to protect young people. It really isn't. It's a political strategy to hurt some of the most vulnerable folks in our community.
Polly, what would you say?
I would say I was really happy to see the opinion. I think that, you know, your name and being able to use your name is really important, right? It should be understandable to everyone, right? That you should be able to show up in whatever space you're in and be able to express yourself as the person that you are. And I would say, you know, to me, the Parents' Bills of Rights in Florida and elsewhere, just want to echo, it's really not about protecting children. It's really about, you know, trying to, in my mind, really undermine public education, right? Schools are really an ecosystem of where parents, teachers, and kids kind of need to be in community together. And these Parents' Bills of Rights are really, you know, they might seem straightforward, but what they do is really tip the balance so far in favor of parents that it makes really schools, you know, difficult to just run and manage and distracts from the real goal of education.
So there are a series of stories that we've come across that speak to a lot of, I think Grace mentioned, allies and advocates stepping forward even more strongly at this particular time because the environment is so charged with anti-LGBTQ legislation, all kinds of other actions, and specifically anti-transgender laws. But Planet Fitness received bomb threats. Now, I didn't know anything about this. I guess they were keeping it kind of quiet. So more than 40 locations across the country, Planet Fitness locations, were hit with bomb threats because of their policy, which is inclusive, meaning that, you know, everybody can come and work out despite what their gender identity is. And I guess a lot of people did not appreciate that. And so they got a lot of social media backlash, particularly, and then the bomb threats, as I mentioned. And the fear was, but first of all, it was led by the right-wing social media account Libs of TikTok. This is a group that's well-known for these kinds of events. And as far as I know, the Planet Fitness has not said they're changing their policy. And others noted that this was very akin to what happened with Bud Light when the drag queen was one of the people featured in a commercial for Bud Light, and then they got hit with a big social media backlash and lost business. Don't know what's going to happen or has happened with Planet Fitness with regard to business, but here's the policy. So I'll get your reaction, Polly.
Well, I'd say one of my reactions is just total sadness. I mean, I think to me, what we're seeing is more and more the use of social media to promote violence. Right? I mean, bomb threats to a gym for having an inclusive transgender policy, really problematic and really concerning. It's just like there were bomb threats to the Maine State House and to legislators when they were working on the SHIELD bill, right? That unfortunately, extremists are really taking, you know, the ability to have debate and you know, address issues of privacy and living together in community and taking it up a notch to, you know, violence. And I think it's really concerning. I think I'm glad to see that Planet Fitness is really, you know, holding the line and addressing, you know, customer concerns as they come up, because I think that we can't shrink away in the face of violence. We have to stand strong.
Jansen?
I share Polly's sentiment that this is, you know, both sad and concerning that the state of our politics has become one of violence or violent threats. Going to what you said earlier, Callie, about how you weren't even aware that Planet Fitness had a inclusive policy for transgender customers, I think that says so much, because Planet Fitness has welcomed transgender, you know, customers for, I think, over a decade, and nobody cared, nobody knew it was fine. It was only until this has become, you know, ginned up by extremists on social media that it's becoming a problem.
Yeah, Grace, I guess that nobody knew, nobody cared is the part of what Jansen says is true. So, you know, we can think about the millions of customers of Planet Fitness who've been working on working out under this policy, and that was fine until recently.
Well, that's exactly it. That the business community in so many ways has been leaders around LGBTQ equality. And certainly we saw that here in Massachusetts during the 2016, 2017, and 2018 campaigns, Yes on Three, around public accommodations protections for trans folks and all folks. And we put together a coalition of business leaders and business communities and organizations that were really stepped up. And so for years, they've been doing exactly what Jansen was saying, coming up with solutions, addressing it as they would any other policies within their businesses, and coming up with something that makes sense. And what we're seeing is that the right doesn't like that. They don't like that actually people are doing the right thing, and that a lot of people just don't care. And so they're resorting to violence and threats because they have not been able to convince the public and the community as the communities at large that any of this is bad.
Mm. And along with that, there are some people who are being more vocal, pushing back against the kind of social media backlash and other kinds of negativity that comes with inclusiveness across the board. And one of those people got a lot of attention recently because of March Madness and all of the fervor that was surrounding the women's competition specifically. And that's South Carolina coach Dawn Staley, the coach of the undefeated all the way to the championship Gamecocks. She was asked in a press room before the recent championship game against Iowa. Remember, that was a big competition to see if Caitlin Clark of Iowa could be bested by the South Carolina Gamecocks, and she was. But she was asked, Coach Staley, whether biological males, I'm putting that term in quotes, should be able to play women's sports, and this was her response.
If you're a woman, you should play. If you consider yourself a woman and you want to play sports or vice versa, you should be able to play.
Do you think transgender women should be able to participate?
That's your question you want me to ask. I mean, you want to ask, so I'll give you that. Yes. Yes. So now the barnstorm of people are going to flood my timeline and be a distraction to me on one of the biggest days of our game. And I'm okay with that.
I should also note that Iowa coach Lisa Bluder was asked the same question and declined to answer. Polly.
I should say, hearing Coach Staley's words, just so grateful for her leadership, I think, and standing up for transgender girls and all girls being able to play sports, I think, and try to, acknowledge the hubbub that's going to come from that really positive comment. But I think really centering the fact that, first and foremost, sports are so important for kids' healthy development, right? Girls, sports are about resilience. They're about teamwork. They're about health and wellness, right? And her sticking up and kind of her and her team's shining moment, the biggest stage, just her simple answer that transgender women and girls should be able to play sports. Just it's so positive, and I'm just so grateful for it. Because also it's really, should be a really simple and straightforward context, right? These kids just want to play.
Grace?
Absolutely. I just am so grateful for her leadership as the true definition of allyship, to just state unequivocally, your support, and recognizing that especially in this politically polarized climate, that will come with a backlash, but it was still important to say and do the right thing. So I'm very grateful and celebratory of her allyship and leadership, and it's also a recognition that, again, part of the tactic is to separate out trans people in particular and isolate us. And when folks who are not trans step up and support, it shows that we are not alone, and that they don't the right does not represent the larger community or most of the people in this country.
Jansen.
Well, what I loved that Coach Staley said was really calling out the opponent's backlash as a distraction. And it's a distraction that harms people, but it isn't a distraction. And as important it is for, you know, there to be fairness for all athletes, including women and girls in sports, you know, the vast majority of, you know, young people who are going to be harmed by these blanket bans are not going to be at the NCAA level. They're, you know, young, you know, people who want to play on their little leagues, on their soccer teams, or in their school sports, and they're playing to be with their friends. They're playing to develop confidence, the self-esteem, and healthy bodies, and not necessary to win a scholarship or a trophy. And that's what's getting lost in this conversation, because the right wing has been so effective at distracting us by these elite competitions.
All right, completely different hard turn here, just because I just want to have something fun on our way out of this conversation. I thought it was interesting that Boston.com did a little piece called The South End versus Dorchester, the battle to be Boston's gayborhood, in quotes, star. So apparently it used to be the South End, but now Dorchester has taken over. And here's content creator AJ Hernandez on Instagram talking about a few gay destinations in Dorchester.
Keep the party going at Blend in Dorchester. Pro tip, if you make it before midnight, you'll have a front row seat to a lip sync drag extravaganza when the clock strikes 12. After brunch at Deck 12 at Yotel the next morning, head to Dorchester Brewing, one of the only queer-owned breweries in Boston.
I thought it was interesting that two things apparently have driven this. The cost in the South End has gotten just even crazier than some other areas of Boston. And so the Dorchester was, I'm not sure it's still, a little friendlier cost-wise. But also what I thought was important that they noted in the piece is that people are a lot more comfortable, if they were ever uncomfortable, with having LGBTQ folks in the neighborhood. So you have more space to spread around and you know, be yourself. So what say you? Do you agree that Dorchester is now the star gayborhood of Boston? Jansen.
Well, I know well enough not to get in the middle of that fight, Kelly. But what I will say is, where is JP in this conversation? I used to live in JP back when it was a lot gayer. And the article just totally ignores JP. So I'm on team JP.
Okay. What about you, Grace?
I love it. I'm so old that I could tell you that back in the day, the Fenway was considered the gay neighborhood and Somerville was the lesbian neighborhood. And so all of it, JP, Dorchester, South End, were all up and coming since then. But, you know, I think it's important to acknowledge that certainly historically, and then this may have changed, is that but before the days of legal protections and at least a relative greater level of public acceptance, you know, the LGBTQ folks were not an economically a group that could afford higher rents. And so historically, we were living in areas that where rents were lower.
All right, Polly, you're going to take a stand.
Well, I'll just say that. First of all, I love that there's a battle to be the most gay neighborhood or queer neighborhood, like right on. Like, let's have every neighborhood have, you know, openness and inclusiveness and more LGBTQ spaces. Like, that is so awesome. And I have to say, I feel like now I've got a list of spots I need to visit in Dorchester. So I guess I'll go Team Dorchester.
Okay, there you go. Someone who stands up for making a choice. Well, thank you all for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Grace Sterling Stoll is the executive director of the Boston Alliance of Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, Queer Youth, or BAGLY. Jansen Wu is the senior director of state advocacy and government relations at the Trevor Project. And Polly Crozier is the director of family advocacy for GLBTQ Legal Advocates and Defenders, or GLAD. Coming up, an immersive and multisensory exhibit at Boston's Museum of Fine Arts rides the cultural Korean wave known as Hallyu. The expansive exhibit showcases the art, song, dance, cinema, and pop culture that has resonated worldwide. That's next. This is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. I'm Callie Crossley. Mm-hmm.